And now, our feature presentation. Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's The First Mountain Man 4, 40 Guns West. Narrated by Mort Shelby, with performances by Richard Rowan, Terrence Aselford, Ken Jackson, David Coyne, Tim Carlin, Karen Carbone, Christopher Graybill, Johann Detweiler, Dan Smith, Dylan Lynch, Elizabeth Demery, James Konacek, Thomas Penny, M.B. Van Dorn, Michael Glenn, James Lewis, Eric Mesner, and Michael John Casey. The mountain man sat by the fire in his parents' house and ruminated as he watched the hearth fire burn. The townspeople of the long-settled Ohio village never really grew easy with Preacher around. The mountain man walked like a big panther, silent and sure. Few of the town and the area's bully boys felt compelled to call him out for a tussle. They very quickly learned that Preacher fought under no rules except his own. One bully boy lost an eye, another was a bet all winner with broken ribs, and the third, and the final man to challenge Preacher, was buried one cold February morning.
Ma, Pa, I reckon I best be thinking of heading back to the High Lonesome.
It's been so good to see you, son, but I fear for you here.
You don't need to be fearful for me, Ma. That bully boy pulled the blade on me. I had no choice in the matter.
Your mother's right, son.
Preacher's father glanced at him as he stuffed his old pipe full of tobacco. He knelt by the fire and picked out a lighted twig and puffed.
You've left us money aplenty to last for the rest of our years. I don't want to see grief come to you. And it will come if you stay around here.
Preacher knew his parents were right. He just didn't want to admit it. But he knew he'd outstayed his welcome in town. He just didn't fit in. Preacher was all muscle and bone and gristle. He was tanned dark by the sun and the wind. He carried the scars of a dozen deadly battles, and he operated under no moral or legal code save that of his own. Nobody was going to make him conform to any standard except that which he considered fair. But in his own peculiar way, Preacher was a highly moral man for the time, this year of our Lord, 1840. He had the utmost respect for womanhood. He loved the land and the critters on it. He could not abide injustice. He didn't like lawyers and thought the country in general was going to hell in a handbasket.
Yeah, you're both right. My own brothers won't even come around whilst I'm here.
They're afraid of you, son. They belong to order and families and the clock. You belong to the wilderness. Their lives are routine. Your life is like the wind. They don't... can't understand that.
For a fact, I have missed the mountains.
I see where you've packed your gear. You must have been thinking about leaving.
Preacher gently placed one strong hand on his father's stooped shoulders, bent from years of brutally hard work clearing the land and wrestling a living from the soil.
I reckon I'll pull out come the morning. Ma, you'll make me a little poke of food, I'd be obliged. Excuse me, I'll be back in a bit.
Where are you going, son?
Oh, I think I'll take me a little stroll through the town. Give the good folks one last look before they're shut of me. You know, when I leave this go-round, I probably won't be back.
Preacher's parents shared a look with each other and nodded. Preacher stepped out of the house into the cold early March air. A thin covering of new snow the past night had laid a carpet of white over the land. Preacher checked on his horse, Thunder, then decided to stretch his legs and walk the short distance into the village. Well, it was a town, actually. Darn near 500 people living all crowded up like ants. preacher still drew stares from the citizens, but he paid him no heed. He just walked on to the combination coach stop, hotel, and tavern. Preacher padded up to the bar, the soles of his high-top moccasins making no more than a whisper on the floor. He leaned on the bar.
Give me a whiskey with a beer chaser.
Several ladies who had stopped there for the night and were waiting on the afternoon coach began whispering behind their fancy fans. Preacher paid them no mind. From the looks of them, they was city women, all gussied up to beat the band. Preacher nodded politely to the barkeep, who slid him his drinks. Preacher hid a smile as the few locals who were lined up at the bar backed away, clear down to the end, getting as far away from Preacher as they could. It had been in this very tavern just 2 weeks past that Preacher had killed that fellow who shucked out his knife during what Preacher thought was just a friendly fist fight. Preacher left him on the floor, cut from navel to neck. A frail boy of about 9 or 10 entered. The boy's clothing was ragged and the soles of his shoes were tied on with string. He carried a small bucket with a lid on it. The top of the boy's head just did reach the lip of the bar. He placed the bucket on the bar.
A bucket of beer for Mr. Parks, please, sir.
The barkeep took the bucket to rinse it out, and the boy looked at the free lunch on the table, and there was hunger in his eyes. His pinched face was pale, and his eyes held a strange brightness. You hungry, boy? The boy's eyes were scared as they fixed on the mountain man.
Yes, sir. Some.
Then fix you a sandwich or two.
Hey, that food's for customers!
Well, the lad just bought him a bucket of beer, didn't he, barkeep? So that entitles him to food. Fix you something to eat, boy.
I'll slap you, boy. You stay away from that food, you woods colt.
Preacher gave the barkeep a disgusted look as he walked to the table and fixed 2 huge meat and cheese sandwiches and gave them to the boy.
You sit over there by the stove and eat and get warm, boy. As for you, mister, you say you want to slap me?
No, sir.
Fine. Now you pour that lad a big glass of milk and then go on about your business and leave the boy alone.
The coughing fit made the boy's face flush deep red. Bad lungs, Preacher thought. It's a wonder he lived through the winter. The hard and big bulk of Elam Parks filled the doorway, his face mottled with rage. He held a quirt in one hand. He pointed the quirt at the boy.
What the hell do you think you're doing, Eddie? I didn't give you permission to eat.
No, but I did.
In the time Preacher had been in town, he'd seen enough of Elam Parks to last him 2 lifetimes. Parks was an important man about the community. He owned several farms, a couple of businesses, and about 50% of the local bank. His brother was in tight with the governor, or senator, or some damn blowhard politician. Parks thought himself the bull of the woods around these parts. He was a bully and a slave driver to those who had the misfortune to work for him. He gave Preacher the same type of look he might give a roach. Then he turned to the boy.
Get up and get back to work, you worthless whelp.
He will when he finishes his meal.
Parks turned back to face Preacher. Oh, he was a big one, all right. Preacher guessed him at about 6'1", with the weight to go with it. A big man with hard-packed muscle.
This is none of your affair, mountain man, so stay out of it. The boy is bound to me. He does what I tell him to do.
Bound, huh? I thought that practice stopped a long time ago. I never did hold with it. It's just a fancy word for slavery, and I don't hold with that either. Go on and eat your meal, Eddie. This big mouth can wait.
Elam's eyes bulged in their sockets and his face flushed beet red. He pointed the quirt at Preacher.
I'll have you run out of town, you trash.
You figure on doing that all by yourself, or you gonna call some boys to help you?
Preacher cut his eyes to the little boy. Eddie was gobbling down his sandwiches as fast as he could. It was evident to Preacher that the sick little boy had not had sufficient food in a long time. Elam shut the door and dropped the quirt on the table.
Mountain man, you've had your way in this town for long enough. You've been strutting about like a peacock. You need to learn a hard lesson, and I am just the man to teach you.
Is that a fact?
Preacher hesitated for a moment, not wanting to bring any further grief to his parents. Popping Parks one in the nose would be satisfying, but it wasn't really how he wanted to spend his last day in town. But still,
I brung mountain ways to this town and expected folks here about to accept them. I apologize for that. But I don't apologize for standing up for the lad yonder. He's a mighty sick little boy, and he's got marks on his face that I just noticed under all that grime. You've been beating on him, Parks.
The boy lacks discipline and motivation. Besides, he's bound to me, and what I do is no concern of yours. But now that you've backed down from this issue, we'll call it even and forget it.
Whoa, I ain't never backed down from no man. So don't you be putting the cart ahead of the horse. Boy, you want some pie or some cake?
Now that's all. I've had quite enough of this foolishness.
Parks moved swiftly for a man of his size. He slammed a heavy hand down on Eddie's shoulder and jerked him to his raggedy shoes. He flung the boy toward the door. Eddie struck the wall. The preacher took two steps forward and started his punch from down around his knee.
Somebody run, get Dr. Ellis!
Preacher knelt down beside Eddie. There was a bump on the boy's head, a slight cut oozing a tiny bit of blood.
Give me a wet cloth. Now, damn it!
A local handed Preacher a dampened cloth. Preacher gently bathed the frightened boy's face, then picked him up and sat him in a chair.
You just take it easy till the doc gets here, boy.
Mountain Man, you better haul your ashes out of here. Elam Parks is a big man in this state. You're prison bound when he wakes up.
Preacher ignored the warning. Obviously, Elam Parks had the whole damn town buffaloed. Preacher looked up as his older brother rushed into the tavern. The older man looked at the prostrate Parks.
My God, Art! Have you taken leave of your senses? That's Elam Parks!
Oh, no kidding! I'd have sworn it was a brand jackass. Look, what's the story on this here boy, brother?
He's a woods colt. Elam bound him out of the orphanage to work for him. Nobody gives a hoot about that brat.
You're wrong, brother. I give a hoot.
The doctor ran in and started for the still unconscious Parks. The preacher grabbed his arm and halted him.
Whoa! You check the boy first, Doc. Then you tell me about him.
Dr. Ellis hesitated, took a short look into Preacher's cold eyes, then shrugged his shoulders. He checked Eddie, put some antiseptic on the small cut, and took Preacher's arm, leading him away from the boy.
That boy is dying, mister. Lung fever. It's a miracle he lived through the winter. The next winter will kill him for sure.
All right. Now you can go check on Stupid over yonder.
Preacher walked over to Eddie, past the out-of-town women who were vigorously fanning themselves, their faces flushed from all the excitement.
You got any belongings, boy?
A few, sir.
Well, go fetch them. You're shut of this town and its sorry people. You're coming with me.
Really?
Really. Now go on. Get back here as quick as you can.
Yes, sir.
Preacher walked over to the bar and finished his beer. He watched through amused eyes as several men tried to get Parks up on his feet.
You best get you a hoist. It's gonna take it to get that moose up.
Parks finally managed to sit up on the floor by himself, but his jaw was swollen and his eyes were glazed. Dr. Ellis bathed his face and the man's eyes began to focus. Pure hate was shining through, all of it directed at Preacher.
Was I you, Parks? I'd be real careful what come out of my mouth right about now.
Preacher's brother rushed over to help Elam get to an upright position. He brushed at Elam's coat.
Oh, Mr. Parks, I'm so terribly sorry about all of this. Please, please, I hope you can find it in your heart to forgive my brother his incredible rudeness.
That's right, brother. Just suck right up to him.
Elam shoved the men away from him.
Mountain Man, if you're in town an hour from now, have a gun in your hand.
I probably will be in town, and if I am, I'll have a gun in my hand. But you best remember this, Parks. I ain't no poor, sick little boy. You level a pistol at me, and the Undertaker will be giving you your last tidying up.
Parks glared at Preacher just as Eddie was returning. He drew back his hand to strike the boy.
I'll break your goddamn arm, Parks.
Elam lowered his hand and stomped off. Preacher looked at the rags Eddie had stuffed into a sack and tossed him into a corner.
We'll get you some new duds, Eddie. But first we gotta get you a bath and a haircut, then we'll dust this town.
Where are we going, Mr. Preacher?
Where the air is pure and clean, where them lungs of yours can heal, We're going west, boy, to the mountains. After buying Eddie some new clothes from the underwear out, Preacher walked back to the barbershop where he'd left him. He found a completely different boy waiting for him out front. Hair trimmed, face and hands washed, and he was smiling. Come on, boy. Let's get a move on before Parks comes wandering back. Preacher checked his awesome four-barrel pistol. He carried only the one pistol while in town, but even that made the local constable nervous. The county sheriff was half a day's ride away. Preacher was under no illusions. He knew that Parks was no coward. If he said he'd come looking for Preacher, he'd come. He walked the boy down to the livery and bought him a pony.
He's wonderful, Mr. Preacher. Is he really for me?
He sure is, Eddie. Now you take good care of him, you hear? The man in the West ain't nothing without his horse.
Yes, sir. I will.
The horse was small but strong-limbed. Preacher guessed it had plenty of staying power. He bought a saddle and saddlebags, too.
You know where Elm Street is, Eddie? Just outside of town?
Yes, sir, Mr. Preacher.
Look, I'm Preacher Boy, not Mr. Preacher, okay? You go on over to Elm, second house on the right, and wait for me there. My Ma and Pa's there. You tell Ma I said to get that poke of food ready. I'll be along shortly.
Mr. Elam's a bad one. He's killed men before, Preacher.
Yeah, well, so have I, son. Go on now.
Preacher made sure the boy was on his way, proudly riding his new pony, and then he stepped out into the main street and walked right up the center of it. A block ahead of him, Elam Park stepped off the boardwalk and into the street, pistol in each hand. Two men began closing the distance.
This don't have to be, Elam. You abused the boy and you got socked in the jaw for it. Now it's done and passed. It ain't nothing worth dying over.
The hell you say, Preacher? I'll not be humiliated in my own goddamn town.
Parks lifted a pistol. The ball missed Preacher by several feet and plowed into the road. Preacher's gun was still holstered.
You better make the next one count, Elam. That's over. You took your shots and you missed. I ain't gonna fire. Go on home. You'll not see me nor the boy never again.
You son of a whore!
You can insult me all you like. Don't you never slur my mama's name. You hear me, Elam?
You sorry, filthy trash! Son of a whore!
Parks lifted his pistol. Preacher drew. People poured out of the stores along the street and from the houses behind them, all gathering around the dead Elam Parks. Preacher reloaded the empty chamber and turned his back on the crowd. He walked to the house on Elm Street. His parents had heard the shots and were waiting in the front yard behind the picket fence. Before he could say a word of explanation to his folks, Preacher's older brother came running up all wild-eyed.
My God! Mama! Daddy! Art's done shot and killed Mr. Elam Parks!
He had it coming. It's long overdue. I'm just sorry it had to be you who done it, Art.
Had it coming? Daddy, how can you say things like that? Why, Mr. Elam was a fine man,
he was a crook and a no-count. Maybe with him dead and gone, now you can get that brown spot off your nose, boy.
Preacher's brother turned toward him, his face red and his hands balled into fists.
If I was you, brother, I'd think about it before you try to pop me one. I'd give it some real serious thought.
You're no brother of mine, Art. You've turned into a godless savage, just like the heathen Indians.
Preacher wanted real bad to hit his brother, but he didn't want to do it in front of his mother. Of course, he figured his pa would probably enjoy seeing it. But he contained the urge to deck his brother and instead turned his back to him. The brother stalked off. Preacher kissed his mother and held her close, both of them knowing this would be their last goodbye. He shook hands with his pa.
You take care, son.
I'll do her, Pa.
God bless, son. I'll put a sack of food on your saddle.
Y'all take care.
The mountain man and Eddie rode out, Thunder's nose pointed to the south. The preacher didn't look back. He would not have been able to see his Ma and Pa through the mist in his eyes.
I thought we were going to head west, Preacher.
We are, boy.
but we'll head south for a time. Tell me about yourself.
Oh, there ain't much to tell, Preacher. My Ma and Pa died with the fever when I was little. Well, I don't even remember them. I was passed from pillar to post for a time. Then the orphanage took me in. I was sick a lot. No one wanted a boy who couldn't work. Mr. Parks got me last year. I reckon I'd have died working for him.
Probably, but you're gonna get well with me. Well, at least some better. I think what you need most of all is good victuals, clean air, and rest. Eddie tired easily, and Preacher was in no hurry. He stopped often and made evening camp much earlier than he normally would. He avoided towns as often as possible, but he was under no illusions about what lay behind him. If Parks was the big shot people thought him to be, there would surely be arrest warrants out for him by now. But he wasn't worried too much about that either. Worrying caused a man to get lines in his face and gray in his hair. Preacher skirted the town of Cincinnati and crossed the Ohio River by ferry and rode into Kentucky.
That was some river, Preacher.
Wait till you see the Mississippi, son. The Ohio runs into the Mississippi down in southern Illinois.
We see that?
Yeah, we might. I was going to St. Louis, but I think I'll skip that town this run. I'll take us down through Arkansas and then cut west from there.
You're thinking that Mr. Park's friends might be after us, aren't you?
You don't miss much, do you, boy? Yeah, that thought has crossed my mind a time or two.
What's it like in the West, Preacher?
Magnificent, Eddie. But it's changed a lot since I first lit out that way. My, that was a time back then. Back in the mountains, why, you could go for months without seeing another white man. Now every time a body looks up, there's a damn cabin being built.
As the days on the trail drifted into weeks and the weather warmed, moving silently into spring, Eddie began to lose his cough as his face and his forearms first blistered, then tanned under the sun and the wind. The boy began putting on weight, and his face lost a sickly pallor, and his eyes lost their feverish tint. Then, as Preacher and Eddie were making camp one afternoon in Arkansas, Preacher realized that the boy had not coughed up phlegm even one time that day. Preacher smiled to himself. He figured all that boy needed was a chance, that and someone to take an interest in him and show him the right path to take. The mountain man and the kid drifted down to Little Rock. After getting provisioned up, Preacher left Eddie with the horses sitting in the shade a bit away from the town and sucking on a piece of peppermint candy. Preacher went to a tavern for a drink and news. If there were warrants on his head or bounty hunters after him and the boy, the tavern would be the place to hear it. Preacher leaned against the plank bar. He nodded to the barkeep, who slid him a whiskey. He sipped it and listened. It didn't take him long to learn the bad news.
I'll not take up the trail of that mountain man, not for $500, not for $5,000.
I'd follow old Nick himself straight to the gates of hell for $5,000.
Yeah, me too. Man, that's a lifetime's wages.
Yeah, how are you gonna spend it if you're dead? Man, this is Preacher we're talking about. He's nearabouts as famous as Carson and Bowie and Crockett and Boone.
He's just one man traveling with a snot-nosed brat.
Preacher was glad he had left the boy hidden in that little glen outside of town. He was suddenly conscious of eyes on him. He sipped his whiskey and then turned his head, meeting the direct gaze of the man who professed to have no fear of hell.
Howdy, stranger. Ain't seen you round here before.
Well, just passing through. Come up from South Texas, heading north. Who you boys be talking about that's so fearsome?
Some old mountain man named Preacher. He killed an important gentleman back up in high and taken a boy west with him. Big money on his head, dead or alive.
Well, indeedy now, I know a little something about Preacher boys. I trapped the high lonesome for some years before the fur price dropped. Preacher ain't old. I figure him for maybe 35 or so. And he's a ring-tailed tooter who was born with a bark on. I ain't never met him, but I know lots who has, and they all tell you the same thing, that you just better leave Preacher alone.
You see? I told you.
He ain't but one man. I'm supplying up and pulling out in the morning. I'm gonna get me a sack full of gold coins.
Me too.
Well, I wish you boys good luck.
Me? I'm heading up toward Canada. Mighty pretty country up yonder. Seated way in the back of the tavern, in the deep shadows, an old man wearing stained and worn buckskin sat, nursing a jug of Who Hit John. The old man smiled secretly and knowingly. He'd recognized Preacher the instant the mountain man had entered the saloon. He picked up his jug, corked it, and quietly slipped out the back of the tavern. Preacher rode to the edge of town and up on a rise. He reined up sharply when he recognized a man, the one who'd sat in the back of the tavern and kept his mouth shut, suddenly riding down the trail, intercepted him.
Good God, Wolverine Pete, as I live and breathe. I heard you got killed up on the Cheyenne last year.
I took me an arrow in my back for a fact. I'm heading for St. Louis in a roundabout way to get her cut out. It's bothering me fierce. Hey, there's big money on your butt, Preacher. It sure must have been some important uppity up fella you killed.
You know the breed, Pete. Big blowhard who likes to push around children and likes to get his butt kissed by adults. Yeah, all the same, I didn't want to get my ma and pa in trouble. I let him have two whole shots at me and I didn't even draw. But then he had to open his yap and insult my ma. Some people just ain't got the damn sense God gave a piss ant.
Sounds to me like you give him every chance in the world to back off. That don't mean you're gonna get any slack cut you. I figure before it's all said and done, there'll be 40, 50 men looking to collect that gold.
They're welcome to try.
I wished I didn't hurt so bad. I'd go with you. Sounds like fun to me.
I'll try to avoid them. I don't want the boy to get hurt.
Sounds like you took a shine to this lad.
Yeah, he just needs a chance, and I aim to see that he gets it.
You want me to lay up on a ridge and kill them fellas you was talking to in the bar?
I'm obliged, but no thanks. They didn't look like much to me. When they see how hard the trail is, I'm thinking they'll give it up.
They might. You take care of yourself, old hoss.
I'll do it, Pete. The two men nodded to each other, each riding off on their own trail. Preacher made his way back to the shady glen where he'd left Eddie. Well, we got manhunters on our trail, boy. We gotta shake them if we can. But we'll have to cross them damn plains before we get to the mountains. So let's ride, son. Hell's nipping at our heels.
Eddie nodded and hopped up on his little pony. Preacher noted with a bit of pride that the boy looked serious, but he wasn't frightened. They rode along, crossing the Arkansas line and heading into the territories. Preacher knew the pursuit was behind him sure enough, but he kept the boy occupied with telling him stories both tall and short. Eddie loved to get Preacher going on some of his exploits. The boy wasn't that sure that Preacher was telling him the truth all the time, but the tales were lively and entertaining, and they helped pass the hours between supper and bedtime. Preacher also made sure to teach the boy to shoot. He armed the boy, stopping often along the way. He had taught him how to handle both rifle and pistol. Preacher still carried his muskets, but back in Ohio, he picked up a couple of 1836 breech-loading carbines and one 1833 Hall North breech loader rifle. The breech loaders gave him a lot more firepower because they took a lot less time to load. Preacher reined up near a creek, glancing around at the trees and the grass.
Okay, Eddie, here's a likely spot. Let's set up camp. And we'll need to rest even more now that we're heading out to the true west. Wild country from here on in, Eddie. And it gets wilder the farther west we go.
They dismounted and set about picketing their horses and Eddie's pony. Preacher sent Eddie to the creek for water as he started on the fire.
Just set that pot right down there, Eddie. Thanks kindly.
Will we see heathen Indians, Preacher?
I just assumed we didn't, but we probably will. I'd best start your learning about Indians, Eddie.
They attack and scalp people.
Well, now some do and some don't. Personally, I don't think Injuns started that scalping business. I think they learned that from the white man some years back. Now, your Sioux and Cree Injuns, to name a few, place a lot of value on scalps, but other tribes place much more value on counting coup on an enemy or stealing one of his horses. And Injuns ain't all bad, Eddie. Well, maybe with the exception of the Pawnee. I ain't never been able to get along with them goddamn Pawnees. Injuns just ain't like us, that's all. Their values is different. You don't never want to show fear around an Injun. Remember that always. Courage is something an Injun respects more than anything else.
Preacher?
Yeah, boy?
You know, There are men following us.
Oh, yeah. I've been knowing that since yesterday afternoon. I wanted to see when you'd pick up on it. That's the way it is, Eddie. People look at a lot of things, but very few actually see anything. I think it's them loudmouths I met back yonder in Little Rock. I don't want to have to hurt none of them, but I'll be damned if I'll let them hurt us.
What are you going to do about those men back there, Preacher?
I don't know yet, boy, but I got to discourage them, and that's a fact.
Is there a reward posted for you?
Yep. I don't know how much, but I suspect it's a princely sum for the news of it to have traveled this far already. We'll face them down over yonder, down by them cottonwoods at the edge of the water.
Preacher took his time making camp and making certain that Eddie was safe from any wandering bullets before he squatted down by the tiny fire he'd thrown together and boiled some coffee. He figured the men behind him would show up in about half an hour. He checked his guns and waited. He didn't miss the mark by more than a few minutes. Three mounted men with pack horses reined up when they spotted Preacher, sitting big as brass by the fire, drinking coffee right out in the open, making no attempt to hide himself. Preacher shook his head. Sure, and if it wasn't the loudmouth from the bar and two friends, they had muskets at the ready.
Hello, Mikhail!
Come on in, if you're friendly, that is. If you're not, you best make your peace with God. Because if you start trouble with me, you're damn well going to be planted here.
You the fella from the saloon.
In the flesh.
Preacher stood up, his hands close to the butts of his terrible pistols.
What are you three doing dogging my back trail?
We were looking for a wanted desperado called Preacher.
Well, you found him. Now what are you going to do about it?
The men exchanged glances. The man who held a kinship with the devil seemed quite the less sure of himself.
In the name of the law, I command you to surrender.
The Indians call me Ghost Walker, White Wolf, and Killing Ghost. Now, before you push me to show you why I'm called that, you boys best turn them ponies around and head on back to Arkansas.
Can't do that. We done made our brags back to home that Williams was gonna bring you in, dead or alive.
You boys is making a bad mistake. That shooting back in Ohio was a fair one. I gave that Parks fella more than a fair shake. Now back off and let me be.
No way! I can feel that gold in my hands!
The man jerked up his rifle and leveled it at Preacher. Preacher snaked the big, heavy, four-barreled monster from his leather holster. The man's companions fought their spooked horses to keep him from bolting. One of them lost his musket in the process. When they got their horses calmed down, they sat staring at Preacher. The mountain man now stood with both hands filled with those terrible-looking pistols.
You killed Charlie Barnes!
Sure looks that way. Either that or he's just gotten mighty goddamn calm.
Well, what do we do now?
Dismount. Careful-like.
Two men dismounted. The fight was clean gone out of them. They even set their guns on the ground without being asked.
Now bury your buddy.
We ain't got any shovel.
Then use your hands and a stick. Come on, move!
While the men were struggling to gouge out a hole, Preacher nudged Eddie awake and set him to stripping the horses of saddle and bridle. The pack horses were picketed with theirs and the supplies were kept. Once them boys were done planting Charlie, Preacher waved a gun muzzle at them.
Now strip down to the buff, boys.
Do what?
Strip down, boy. Are you deaf?
The men took one look at the eight barrels pointing at him and quickly peeled down to the bare skin.
This is plumb humiliating.
Now get back on your horses and ride out of here.
Bareback? Like this?
Like that. Or I'll shoot you both and leave you for the buzzards. What's it gonna be?
But there's highwaymen back yonder. We ain't got no means of protecting ourselves.
One look at you two, naked as a jaybird, and any outlaws will laugh themselves silly at the sight. Now you got 10 seconds to get clear before I start shooting. If I ever see either one of you following me again, I'll lay up an ambush you, and that's a promise.
Ow, ow, oh, damn it.
Come on, Eddie. Let's fix us something to eat and see what we got new in supplies.
Those men are sure going to be rubbed raw and sore time they get back to town.
I expect so. Break out the frying pan, boy. I'm hungry.
While Eddie cut slices of bacon, Preacher inspected the newly acquired supplies. The men had provisioned well. The added supplies would take Preacher and the kid a long ways. Preacher inspected the dead man's horse. It was a fine animal, too fine to be turned loose. Preacher could trade the horse for something later on up the trail. The men had brought along enough powder and shot to stand off a damn army. One had brought along a fowling piece, a fine double-barreled shotgun that just might come in handy along the way. There was nothing like a shotgun all loaded up with nuts and bolts and the like to take all the fight out of a troublemaker. Preacher had seen men cut literally in two with a shotgun.
Those men might try to come back.
Yeah, I expect they will.
If I was set loose in the wilderness bare butt naked, I figure I'd try to get my clothes back too. Wouldn't you?
I expect.
Later on, in the middle of the night sometime, Preacher lay in his blankets and listened to the two Arkansas men as they made their return to the camp by the creek.
Ow, ooh, ow, ow, Rockstar, damn it.
Shush up. Ow. Thorns, god damn it.
Preacher slipped from his blankets and picked up a tree branch he'd cut into a club hours before. He didn't really want to kill these two, just discourage them. He glanced over at Eddie. The boy was sleeping soundly, a habit that he would soon break if he wanted to survive out here. Preacher slipped like a ghost out of camp and away from the dying eye of the fire. By now he had the men spotted. Wasn't all that hard to do. Their lily-white skins was shining in the faint light like linens on a line. Preacher slipped around and came up behind him, his moccasins making no sound as he moved from tree to tree. Preacher had to put a hand over his mouth to keep from laughing out loud at the sight. The men had wrapped some sort of leafy vine around their waists. Looked at Preacher like it was poison ivy. The men must have tore the stuff down in the dark, not realizing what they were wrapping around their privates and over their buttocks. They'd damn sure know come tomorrow what with all the itching and scratching they'd be doing. Preacher whacked the one in the rear on the back of his knife. When the man in front turned around, Preacher smacked him across the forehead. Being careful to avoid the poison ivy, Preacher tied him up back to back, ankle and wrist, and left him on the ground. He returned to his blankets and went to sleep, a smile on his face. The men probably realized it would only lead to more knots on their heads if they hollered during the night, so they remained silent until Preacher was up just before first light, frying bacon and making coffee.
Mr. Preacher, we is in some awful discomfort over here.
I don't doubt it. You got poison ivy wrapped all around you.
Well, hell, Jonas! No wonder I've been itching all night.
Mr. Preacher.
What is it?
If you'd give us back our clothes and saddles, we'd get so far gone from here by noon, we wouldn't even be a memory in your mind.
You ain't getting your supplies back.
You can have them, Mr. Preacher, with our blessings.
Preacher already had their clothes piled up and ready. He walked over and cut the men loose.
You boys head on down to the creek and pat mud all over your privates. It'll help take the itch out of that poison ivy.
The two men waddled awkwardly to the mud, their fronts and back angry red with rashes and insect bites. Eddie watched them, his eyes full of contempt.
I know better than to wrap myself in poison ivy.
The two would-be hunters heard that and shot Eddie unfriendly looks. Preacher raised a brow at them, and they dropped their eyes back to the mud.
You could have killed them, but you didn't.
Yeah, I could have, but they're followers, not leaders. That Charlie Barnes, now he talked him into this. There's a time to kill and a time to talk, boy. I think it says something like that in a good book. You know, I had me a Bible, but I lost it last year. I think I left it with Hammer.
Hammer?
My old horse. Some scum killed him. I tracked him and killed them. Hammer was a good horse. I miss him. We rode a lot of trails together.
The men were a mighty sorry-looking pair when they climbed up the creek bank and joined Preacher and Eddie around the fire. Preacher had cooked bacon and pan bread and handed the men some plates.
Care to sit?
We'll eat and be proud to do it. But if you don't mind, we'll stand.
Fair enough. You boys stop every now and then on your way back home and bathe the infected areas with mud if you can't find no golden seal root to powder up and put on it. Apple cider vinegar works real good, too.
Much obliged, Mr. Preacher.
I'll think nothing of it. But in the future, you boys best choose your company with a tad more care.
You can bet on that. Our days of manhunt just begun and ended with this trip.
Wise decision, son.
way I heard it, Mr. Preacher. There's 40 or 50 men hunting you. Maybe more than that. Probably more than that. There's big money on your head. Several thousand dollars as of a couple of weeks ago. That must have been a real important man you killed back east.
Is that a fact? After the men finished their food and left, Preacher and Eddie wasted no time. They packed up and got gone within the hour. As they rode, Preacher pondered what Jonas had told them.
Them men behind us know I'll be heading to the mountains, Eddie. If any of them has any smarts, and I expect some of them do, they've headed straight west and will be trying to get ahead of us for an ambush.
So if they think we're going straight to the mountains, we don't go.
You catch on real quick, lad. That's right. We don't go. Leastways, not right off.
Well, where are we going then?
North. Straight north. We got staple supplies to last us a long time. I'll kill a deer or two and show you how to make jerky. Keep the skins and make you some proper clothing, or I'll have some fitted buckskins tossed in when I trade that spare horse. We're going to be skirting the edge of Pawnee country, and me and them Pawnees never has got on worth a good goddamn. Once they know I'm in their territory, and they'll know it, bet on that, we'll have us a fight on our hands. But I get along with the Sioux and the Crow and most of the others.
The mountain man and the boy turned their horses and rode toward the plains. When Eddie caught his first glimpse of the plains, he was speechless. It seemed to stretch forever. Mile after mile of waving grass and an endless horizon that seemed impossible to ever reach. Preacher smiled at the boy's expression.
Takes your breath away, don't it, lad?
Oh, yes, sir.
I've known people to go mad out here. Wind blows all the time. It's the vastness of it all. And the buffalo boy, I can't describe him. I've seen thousands and thousands of them on the move. Maybe there was millions of them, I don't know. Good Lord alone knows. The earth beneath your feet trembles when they pass. You know, the buffalo is life itself to the plains Indian. Buffalo and the horse, they use parts of the buffalo hide to make drums, moccasins, shirts, leggings, and dresses for the women folk. They use buffalo hair to make rope. Horns of the buffalo is used for drinking cups. Bones is used to make all sorts of engine tools. And the paunch of a buffalo is used as a cook pot. Yeah, without the buffalo, the engine would probably cease to be.
You like the engines, don't you, Preacher?
Most of them, yeah. I've lived with them, and I've fought them. I had me a woman now and then, too. I've been captured and tortured by them, and I've laughed and joked and ate with them. Look at it, Eddie. The plains. As far as I know, there ain't another sight like it in the whole wide world. And there never will be again. Because when the white man comes, and he's coming, they'll junk it all up and try to change it. They'll plow lines in the earth and change the flow of rivers and kill off all the buffalo herds. Kill off all the wolves, too, because the settlers is ignorant of the ways of the wilderness. Each animal is dependent in some ways on other animals. The wolves kill off the old and the weak in a herd. Without them, the herds wouldn't be healthy. But the white man don't understand that. They could understand it, but they won't. I tell you, boy, there ain't nothing prettier in the world than laying in your blankets at night and listening to wolves sing and talk to each other.
Won't they attack you?
No, them's old wives' tales from scary people. There ain't never been no healthy, full-grown wolf ever attack no human person that I ever heard tell of. A body just has to understand the ways of the wolf and respect them, that's all. But there's do's and don'ts when it comes to wolves. Don't never corner one. If you do that, you got big trouble on your hands. Don't never go between the he-wolf and his mate. Oh, they don't like that. A wolf pack is a real complicated type of society, Eddie. They got leaders and co-leaders. They're real protective of their young. The males and females take turns caring for their pups. Now you see why some Injuns call me White Wolf, I guess. I'm a brother to the wolf. I had one big old buffalo wolf stay with me for weeks one time. He must have weighed 150 pounds. I tossed some scraps of food, and at night he'd sleep so close to me I could feel his breath. But I never touched him, and he never touched me. But we was brothers. I knew it, and he knew it.
What happened to him?
I don't know. One day he just veered off and was gone. Sat on a rise and watched me ride off. Threw back his head and he talked to me until I couldn't hear him no more.
That's sad.
Yeah, it was.
I never forgot it, neither.
I think I would have liked to have been a mountain man.
You'd have made a good one, boy. I saw right off you got what it takes. Eddie smiled the rest of the day. Preacher and Eddie camped along the Walnut. Preacher had just killed the deer and set Eddie to slicing it up. A Cherokee appeared out of the wild and approached the camp, making the sign of peace.
Well now, come on in. I ain't seen you in an age.
Ghostwalker, it has been since I was with a scouting party north of Bent's Fort.
Good to see you. Come on in and sit for a bit. We'll have fresh venison as soon as it's done cooking.
There are many men gathering only a few days' ride from here, Ghostwalker.
You know any of them?
Bones Gibson.
Preacher nodded, not surprised. Bones Gibson was a first-class manhunter. Rumor was, and Preacher didn't doubt it, that Bones had killed more than 1,000 Injuns and more than 100 white men during his long career. It was also said, and Preacher didn't doubt this either, that Bones had never lost a man once he got on his trail. But Bones had never been west of the Mississippi, and he had no experience with the Plains Injuns. Preacher looked at Eddie.
I won't lie to you, son. We're in for it.
The boy nodded his head, a solemn expression on his face. Even he had heard of Bones Gibson.
The men have with them a pony tracker called Darkhand.
Damn the luck. Darkhand hates my guts, Eddie. I killed his brother and whooped him twice. Last time I thought I killed him. Should have made certain. God damn it. Bones is going to have a half a dozen hard cases that have been with him for years, too. Andy Price, George Winters, Horace Haywood, Mac Corney and Cal Johnson, and all Van Eaton, I'm sure. Van Eaton is a bad one. Just as bad as Bones, and shit, maybe even a little worse.
My people are moving north to Canada because of the death of our chief. We hope that there we can find peace. Why don't you and the boy come back with me and ride away with us? Your pursuers are looking for two sets of tracks, not many.
That's kind of you, but no. Because when they find us, and they will, they'd kill you all for helping us. I don't think they wouldn't, but I do appreciate the offer.
The Cherokee ate and socialized. Eddie's eyes were wide at some of the tales and had seen his first real live Injun. Soon the brave had to be on his way. He wished them both peace and luck before leaving Preacher and the boy alone by the small fire.
We gotta move fast, Eddie. We gotta reach the mountains. Once we's in the high lonesome, them old boys will play hell taking us. I know places there that even the Injuns don't know about. We can move a lot faster than the mob behind us, but we'll be riding right through Kiowa and southern Cheyenne country. After that, it'll be mostly Utes. I get along all right with the Cheyenne. Kiowa and Utes can be right testy. You never can tell about them. Well, let's hit the blankets, boy. We ride steady tomorrow.
Just a few miles from where the town of Wichita would someday stand, men had gathered as the sun started to peek over the horizon. What a strange collection of men it was. Some were elaborately dressed in the most up-to-date sporting clothes on the market. Others wore homespun. Some were dressed in buckskins. A few carried the most modern hunting rifles, made especially for them, while others carried long flintlock rifles and shotguns. Some carried short-barreled muskets. But despite their difference in dress and speech and weaponry and levels of education, or lack of it, they shared one thing in common. They were hunters. Most were here for money, but a few were here solely for the enjoyment of the blood sport of manhunt, the most skilled and elusive game on earth, the ultimate sport. Bones Gibson sat on his horse off to one side of the gathering, watched with grim amusement on his hawk-like face as the many men tried to get packed and mounted up. All in all, it was a scene of chaos and confusion. At last count, there were 65 gun-toting men gathered, 12 servants, 4 cooks, 105 horses, and 20 pack mules. Oh yeah, 7 reporters. There were 2 Englishmen, 2 Frenchmen, 2 Prussians, 1 Austrian, and 1 nobleman from Spain. The men had been communicating by letter, mapping out this expedition for 2 years. They had originally planned to travel out west and shoot Injuns. But after they had all gathered at a grand hotel in New York City and heard of this preacher person, why, this seemed like it would be way more fun.
They could always find a savage to kill. They all beat it across the country just as fast as they could to get here. They called themselves professional adventurers, and to most men, they were brave. They had traveled the world in their quest for this ultimate game animal. They had faced hardships, and they were certainly not lacking in courage, although it would be safe to say that they were all a tad shy on the common sense side. They were arrogant, aloof, and they looked down on anyone who wasn't nobility. They'd all had some fancy titles stuck in front of their names like Sir, Count, Duke, Baron, or Prince. On the other side of the coin were the bulk of those about to take out after Preacher and the boy. Most of them were the hard ones, professionals in the art of manhunting, trapping, Bones Gibson's men. One of the trackers leading the bounty hunters was a renegade Pawnee called Darkhand, so named because of a strange large birthmark that covered nearly his entire right hand. Bones' right-hand man, Van Eaton, a heavily muscled, sour-faced man who was little more than a brute, rode up alongside him and scowled.
I don't see why you let them idiots come along.
Preacher will kill probably 20 or 25 of them long before we corner them. We can use their supplies and mounts as ours gives out.
I don't like them reporters along.
We couldn't refuse them. Freedom of the press and all that shit. But if they can't keep up, well, that's going to be their hard luck.
Van Eaton curved his thick lips into something vaguely resembling a smile.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Accidents do happen along the trail.
Exactly.
Bones?
Yeah.
Preacher ain't no pilgrim. We all best keep this in mind. When we get up into them mountains, all of Preacher's friends is going to be lined up solid against us.
Yeah, but from what I've been told, there are a few real mountain men left. Certainly not enough of them to cause us any real worry.
I don't know. When we hit them mountains, we best double the guard and sleep with one eye open.
I don't remember you ever being this worried before.
Ain't none of us ever been this far west, Bones. I ain't never seen no country like this. Well, there ain't nothing out here, Bones. Empty.
Except for thousands of Indians. But you and I have fought Indians hundreds of times.
We also knew the country, Bones. And we ain't never fought no plains Indians. We gonna lose men on this job. Lots of men. If it wasn't for all that money them foreigners offered to pay us, I'd say to hell with it.
Van, those guns they's carrying is worth thousands of dollars. And they got thousands more in cash money with them. I seen some of it. The rings they's wearing is worth a fortune. No, Van, them fancy pants, nose up in the air gentlemen ain't never gonna come out of the mountains alive. But we are rich enough to retire.
You got it all worked out, don't you?
I always do, Van. So don't you worry. I always do.
Knowing that their chances for survival were nil if they were caught out in the open plains by 65 or so men, Preacher and Eddie packed up, saddled up, and rode out before dawn that morning, heading straight west. After traveling for some hours and a few breaks for Eddie, who seemed more tired than he'd been lately, Preacher finally found what he was looking for. The country had turned higher and drier, the grass shorter, and the landscape dotted with buttes, cliffs, and mesas.
Okay, Eddie, I got an idea. I need to get back in there by the rocks behind them bushes. Now you stay put and wait for me to come back.
Yes, sir. I will.
Preacher tied sacking over the hooves of Thunder and Eddie's pony and walked the horses back to where he'd found the blind canyon. There, he removed the sacking and rode the horses deep into the canyon. Then he replaced the sacking and walked them back out, staying close to the wall and carefully removing all signs of his departure. He picketed the horses and then ran back to fetch Eddie and the other horse. He found a small creek and led him back along it. By the time Bones and his men reached the creek, the water would have cleared and the hoof marks would be long gone.
Now, Eddie, we got about a day and a half, maybe 2 days, before these men reach us. I know that Bones and Van Eaton don't know this country. What I don't know is whether Darkhand does. I'm betting that he don't know this is a blind canyon. I got to shorten the odds some, and this is how you and me is going to do it.
Bones sat in the saddle, watching a hawk soar high above while waiting for Darkhand to report back. Bones had ridden out, taking Van Eaton, Darkhand, and George Winters to Ride Point, as well as to get the hell away from all the noise of the expedition. Once the tracks of their quarry were spotted, Bones sent Darkhand to scout it out. It wasn't long before the Pawnee rode on back.
Preacher rides into the canyons to try to lose us, Bones. But it is a clumsy attempt. I find his tracks going in, nothing coming out.
Is there a way around it?
There is a way around everything, but we would lose much time. But time is what we have. I do not like this canyon country. I say we go around.
There's lots of twists and turns in there. Preacher could do most anything. Head in any direction or circle around and come in behind us.
George Winters had dismounted and was studying the tracks that were plain before him. There was no doubt about it. Preacher and the kid and their pack horses had entered the pass and not come out. George looked up at Bones.
Well, I say we got no choice but to follow. If we don't, we run the risk of losing them.
Bones looked up at the sun. Not yet noon. They had plenty of time. He made up his mind.
Well, let's go. We might trap them in there and end this show here and now.
High atop the mesa above the entrance to the Blind Canyon, Eddie and Preacher looked at each other and grinned.
They took the bait. I can't believe it, but they done it. All right, Eddie. You know what to do with my signal.
The reporters from New York and Boston and Philadelphia did not like this canyon. It was hot, but still not one breath of breeze entered the fan. John Miller, on assignment from a New York City paper, glanced at the Philadelphia journalist and saw that Raymond Sims was not happy about it either. William Bennett, writing for a magazine out of Boston, was behind him. One look at his face told Miller that he, too, was pretty goddamn miserable. When their editors had handed them this assignment, all the men had been thrilled beyond words. They would be going into wild, savage, untamed, and unexplored country. They could all write books about their adventures, make a lot of money, and perhaps aid in bringing an outlaw to justice. But back in Missouri, they had been told by a dozen well-placed gentlemen that Preacher was no outlaw. He had worked for the government and was a highly respected scout and trailblazer. When they had finally realized that Bones Gibson and his men were nothing more than common murderers, thugs, and fooligans under the dubious disguise of bounty hunters. But it was too late to turn back. The reporters were dependent on the bounty hunters to guide them back to civilization. The eastern reporters were as lost as dim-witted geese. Darkhand had fallen back to the middle of the column. He didn't like these twisting canyon trails, and he felt in his belly that Preacher had set up some sort of trap. Sir Elmore Gerald Taylor twisted in the saddle, looking about with a big grin on his face.
I say, isn't this grand fun, Baron Zaunbelter?
Yeah. I am so disappointed that we have not been able to kill any savages. Let us hope our luck will change.
But what magnificent country we've seen. The vastness of it boggles the mind.
Abruptly, the trail ended against a sheer rock wall. For a moment, Bones was stumped. An outrider toppled from a saddle, shot through the head. His brains splattered all over the shirt front of the man riding next to him.
God damn!
Preacher and Eddie had worked for most of a day and a half rigging another surprise for Bones and his party. The preacher's yell, Eddie slapped Thunder on the rope, and the animal jumped, stretching a rope taut. The animal strained, and a wooden platform gave way, spilling hundreds of pounds of rocks of various sizes down into the narrowest part of the canyon trail. Rocks took other rocks with them as they tumbled down the incline, some of them huge boulders. And within a matter of seconds, the trail was blocked by a pile of boulders 20 feet high and 50 feet deep. Preacher filled both hands with those terrible pistols of his and wreaked havoc on those trapped inside the narrow walls of the dark trail. When the pistols ran dry, he gathered up dry bushes he'd set aside. He lit them from the fire and began throwing them onto the canyon floor. Then he started throwing small bags of black powder into the flames. The results were even better than he'd hoped for. The concussion of the explosion brought down more rocks, hopelessly blocking the trail in a half a dozen more locations. A warrior's smile on his face, Preacher ran around the lip of the Blind Canyon to where Eddie was, and together, they got the hell out of there. Bones squatted down after he realized that no more shots were coming their way and assessed the situation. It was going to take them a good day and a half, maybe longer, to dig their way out of the huge pile of rocks blocking the trail in half a dozen places. And they'd lose another 4 or 5 days tending to the wounded. Normally, Bones would have left the wounded to fend for themselves. But with the reporters along, he couldn't do that. They'd write him up as a monster, or worse. Darkhand squatted down beside him in the churned and bloody sand.
Damn you, Preacher. Damn your eyes.
I tried to warn you about Preacher. Do not underestimate the man. Not ever.
How many men down?
8 dead, 9 others wounded. 2 of them will not live through the night.
One man and a snot-nosed kid, and they take out 19 men, and we never get a glimpse of them. Get Van and the boys that ain't dead, and let's clean this mess up.
After Bones and company buried their dead and tended to their wounded, the camp was set up and the cook fire started. As the evening meal was prepared, the reporters noted down the whole mess in their journals. None of the reporters had been hit by any of the rounds Preacher had fired, but they had had the shit scared out of them, literally in a couple of cases. They wrote out the whole of the events in their journals, carefully coding their words in case Bones or some of his men who could read might see what they'd said. They were not being kind to Bones or any of the men with him. The reporters now realized, after listening to some of the men talk, the Preacher was no desperado, and the shooting back in Ohio had been a fair one. The thousands of dollars now on Preacher's head was not an officially sanctioned reward, but money put up by friends and family of Elam Parks. And the reporters now were having doubts that any of them would live to tell of this terrible travesty of justice. For to a man, they believed Bones and his men intended to kill him, and the so-called noblemen who were on this blood sport. The reporters began to make friends with one of the men who had come along for the adventure of it, a man from St. Louis who was having a lot of second thoughts about this trip. His name was Jim Slattery. Jim came to the reporters' fire and squatted down, pouring himself a cup of coffee. He glanced at Miller from New York and Bennett from Boston.
I figure in about a week we're going to be about 60, 70 miles north and some east of Bent's Fort. I'm fixing to leave this den of thieves and murderers and head there. You all won't come with me? What do you say, Bennett?
I've heard of that place. We could perhaps hire an escort back east from there.
I'm sure you could. They supply wagons rolling in and out all the time, so I was told. Boys, I got me a bad feeling about the company we're in. I think them foreigners are in for a rude surprise. If Bones and his bunch has their way, I don't believe none of them hoity-toity barons and dukes and counts and the like is going to come out of this alive. But they're a nasty lot themselves, so I don't hold out a lot of sympathy for them.
Nor do we. God, I want to go back to New York.
All right, then. That's settled. When I'm ready to make the jump, I'll give you boys a high sign. Stay loose.
Mr. Slattery, what do you think is going to happen to this Preacher person?
Preacher is a war horse, boys. That little deal back in the canyon should have warned off any reasonable thinking man. Damn sure did me. I think these old boys are going to chase Preacher and the sick little boy until they catch up with him. When they do, they're going to be the sorriest bunch of people east or west of the Mississippi River. That's what I think.
We are all in agreement with that. Tell us, Mr. Slattery, why have we not seen any savages?
They've seen us, you can bet on that. We're too big a bunch for them to attack. Now, I ain't gonna lie to you. When we leave the main body, we're gonna be in considerable risk. We're gonna have to ride light, fast, and cautious. But if we have any luck at all, we'll make it. We're all armed. From what I've been told, it'll take a big bunch of savages to attack us. Dying young ain't real attractive to an Injun. But stay ready, boys. Night.
Night, Slattery.
Across the way, Van Eaton had been watching the Missouri man and the reporters through very suspicious eyes. Slattery's casual farewell fooled him not at all.
I think them reporters is planning on pulling out when they get a good chance.
Oh, good. I hope they do. They'll be fair game for any band of hostiles who spot them. None of those reporters can shoot worth a damn. The reason we haven't been attacked is because of our size. Wherever those nitwits are thinking ahead, odds are they'll never make it. With them gone, it'll be a whole lot easier for us to kill Preacher and the kid.
Bent's Fort. That's the only place they could be heading.
Hmm.
Let them go. Even if they do make it through and tell their story to the army, and the army decides to do something about it, this hunt will be long over before patrols can find us. I say good riddance.
That kid had something to do with that ambush back yonder. I want that little puke alive. I'll skin him and listen to him holler.
Well, you can sure have him. Might be fun listening to him squall. Say, cut me off a hunk of that venison, Van. Talk like that makes me hungry.
Preacher and Eddie had been riding steady from before dawn to nearly dark for several days. Preacher figured they were at least a week ahead of the manhunters and could finally afford to relax and rest the horses. They dismounted by a small river near a stand of trees. After helping to picket the horses, Eddie gathered up dry wood for a smokeless fire without having to be told. Preacher felt as proud of the boy as if he were his own blood.
This here's Big Sandy Creek, boy. We'll make camp here.
How far to the big mountains?
5 days easy riding.
Preacher?
Yeah, boy?
I know you've been thinking I'm all bitter and such, but I know the truth. I ain't gonna make it, Preacher. My lungs is too messed up, and my heart is weak. Right now, with me all tanned and such, it's like the quiet before the storm. But I can't get no better.
Oh, now, Eddie.
No, Preacher. I know. Believe me, I do. But I'm not afraid of dying. Really, I'm not. I've been baptized, and I believe in heaven. So let's just, you and me, just have a real good time for as long as it lasts, all right?
Preacher looked long into the boy's eyes and saw the truth there.
All right, Eddie. We'll have us a high old time. I got cold mountain lakes for you to see and catch big trout out of. I got waterfalls and wild rushing streams for you to witness. Meadows busting with flowers of all colors. We'll have a summer of fun, you and me. You know what? You might be wrong about yourself, boy.